it kind of caught me flat-footed because I was telling Brian, Brian's producing the rest of the week. I said, he's got to get the Ernie Freedman combo. You can hear him? Yeah, the great. I don't even know how I found that, but I found it, I don't know, you know, 18 years ago, and it became the first break exit music, you know, into the break. So, yeah, Ernie Freedman combo. It's got a classic, it's got that, you know, Steve Allen, Jack Parr feel to it. Very loved it. So now Brian's got it. He'll have it tomorrow. Let's get Sid in here for a little riffing on the weekend and Dornick. Unbelievable. Plus, of course, we'll look ahead to the Jim Dandy and, you know, we'll... Dornick becomes the division leader. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillendale, who, of course, stands for Good Magic, who is on a tear. Sid, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Steve.
Dick actually set us up like a volleyball talking about Good Magic. And, you know, he's not a secret by any means, and he's a six-figure stud fee. There's a lot to like about Dornick's exploits at this point, Dick. That's it. Sorry.
Yeah, it's, you know, he showed this... last year, right in the Remsen, against Sierra Leone. He's one of these horses that, you know, gets the front fights on it. It looks like he's been ridden hard from some ways out. And just his style, he just keeps going though, and he fights back. And I guess that's we've seen this already, but I guess the announcer in his last race, you know, thought he was done and was ready to anoint Mindframe and got surprised. But at this point, it shouldn't be a surprise because that's the way this horse likes to run.
The way, and I suppose, you know, when you have horses down the stretch like that, and you don't really have the, a visual perspective, because it did look, at a certain point in the stretch, it did look like Mindframe was, you know, was going to get right on by, but then just as soon as he... You know, from a pan, weird pan angle, just as soon as it looked like Mindframe might be forging on by, you could see that Dornick, even though, you know, what was strange about it, Sid, was even though he was not in the field of vision, I mean, they were too far apart for Dornick, I would think, for Dornick, to eyeball him and for him to catch him, right? But he could hear him.
The hearing. But yeah, I mean, even if that's the case, you know, the horse just keeps responding, which is a really nice trait. I mean, this is not a horse on the front end like a Dr. Fager. This is a horse on the front end more, you know, just he's a fighter. In other races, you know, he's had the opponent even closer to him. But he does give it everything he has, and that's a really nice quality. You know, a lot of horses might give up, might throw it in, but, you know, he seems to really thrive, whether he has somebody right next to him or not, as in this case. And the thing about him is he is ridden hard from, you know, when you look at them coming into the turn, Irad is just sitting chilly and slick on Mindframe. Looks like he's going to really blow by, right? And Luis was just really pushing his horse at that point. And if you didn't know it about this horse's characteristic, you know, you might be tempted to say that, yeah, he was about to be fried, but we've now seen it several times with him, so you can't discount it, this horse. And it's a great fighting quality. It's the kind of stuff that you like to see in a horse. So that's why, you know, he's going to be going to Spendthrift, and at this point, you know, he didn't win the Derby as his full brother did, but he's showing more depth to his career at this point.
I'm glad you referenced Mage. I'm curious, Sid. Let me pull up. I want to pull up both pedigrees, actually.
Well, it's the same pedigree.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's right. They're full. Fulls. That's right.
Yeah,
In terms of pricing, yeah. I mean, obviously the season continues.
Yeah.
What did Airdrie stand, Mage?
It was $25,000, I believe.
Interesting. All right, and you know, because obviously Good Magic, you know, is now a six figure. He's at $125,000.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, this horse, Dornock, is a different physical type than Mage. Mage is more similar to his father, Good Magic, smaller horse. Dornock is a big horse, and so there's some contrast in physicality, and also the running style is different. You know, Mage liked to come from out of it, and this horse has shown that he can really fight and carry a race from the beginning. So, you know, in a lot of ways, there's for people that, you know, like horses that can go to the front, can still get a distance of ground, and has that fighting spirit. Not that Mage didn't, but I mean, it's more evident in this horse's riding style. You know, he's going to be, I think he'll be quite attractive, Steve.
Sid, I've had you riff on this in the past, but explain the physical mating. I mean, in terms, if people are, you know, now, you know, it does seem like he's not going to race beyond three. At least that seemed to be the indication that the quote. I saw people were picking on Danny for his quote about, you know, how logical it is that that Dornock go directly to, you know, go directly to stud for next year. That seems to. I love how people make their declarations and you know, have determination of other people's property and how it and how it should be managed. Remarkable. But when it comes to then matching physicals, Sid, how do you approach that? You know, contrasting, you know, that Mage is on the, you know, on the I don't want to say smaller side, but I mean of the two, you know, what is the physical matching portion of the equation when Work Thoroughbred Consultants makes recommendations?
Well, you know, first and foremost, we're making recommendations on what we like on pedigree. It's really up to the mare owner, although we point out physical characteristics and stuff. It's really up to the mare owner to, or his advisors or her advisors or her or him, you know, to decide whether it's going to also be a physically complementary mating, depending on what their views are. You know, so like when we do a mating for a client, we give up to 10 stallions that we like. We rank them, and you've seen it, and it's really up to the mayor owner to utilize that portion of it, Steve. Big horses, you know, have been, quite successful in recent times. Not that they haven't in the past, but I mean, just off the top of my head, you know, you look at a horse like Quality Road, Uncle Mo, those are bigger horses. Unbridled was a big horse, Unbridled Song, a big horse. Arrogate, is a big horse. There's a tendency when it's commercial, when things are, obviously we all know this, it's, a lot of the elite breeding is focused on the sales ring. So it's always nice if you can get an early cover with a horse that looks big and is gonna have the physicality for the sales ring. Those are the type of horses that tend to shine in the ring. It's long past the time when, a horse like Northern Dancer, who was small, and his sons, a lot of his good sons were small, they kind of changed the paradigm for a while. And you still have elements of that. Warfront, for example, is a small horse, very small. Rahi was extremely small. But for the most part, commercial farms are looking for a little over average size. And a lot of times they go with big horses. And like I just mentioned, some of these big horses are stars of the game. So in that respect, that's certainly not going to take anything away from Door Knock. And, perhaps the size factor might detract a bit from Mage.
Is it practical or... technically sound determination. If you've got a first year mare, the first foal typically will be a smaller foal than the mare will ultimately potentially produce, just because of the natural.
That does tend to happen. Smaller first foals are widely known.
Do the mare owners prefer to avoid, a large physical for that first foal for that reason? Although I remember probably Dr. Alday saying that a mare will not grow a foal bigger than she can expel.
Right. Yeah. No, it's an interesting question, but what tends to happen with first year horses? Well, the traditional way of thinking about it used to be that if you had a first year horse, you're going to send a little older mare, especially one that might have had success. In other words, you want to breed a mare that's had some success to a first year horse, and conversely, proven stallions are a great proving ground for unproven mares. So a lot of proven stallions might get maiden mares. That used to be the formula. Of course, these days with commercial considerations, people take a mare off the track and go to a first year horse too. In that case, of course, you've got two unknowns. The mare doesn't have a produce history, nor does the sire. That's why in other times a more successful mare might go to a younger horse and vice versa. But it's really, you know, people, it's a sophisticated, you know, game in a lot of ways now than it ever was. Obviously, people can breed, you know, 250, 300 mares to a stallion now, where a lot of that has to do with great advances in veterinary medicine. In the older days, of course, you know, stallions would breed 50 mares or whatever. So management has evolved in a lot of ways as well. So, you know, it's a lot like baseball and players, you know. Pitchers throw much harder now, and they need to, because the hitters are much more sophisticated and they've been training for a lot longer, almost sports specific since, you know, they're 10 years old. And to counteract that, that's why pitchers have to be those guys that can even throw harder than guys that used to in the past. Of course, all of that leads to other unintended consequences. You know, people get hurt more. So this, you know, it's a topic.
Yep. Sid, where'd you go? I lose you? Huh. Sid? No? Well, that was, he's still connected. Yeah, the call failed, exactly. I knew. I could tell. That was, it was not, it was going wrong. there. Yeah, I could, well, yeah, you, I could tell you that was going to drop. It was stumbling and then it was gone.
Oh, it's I love these conversations on here too, because it really does allow us to talk, even if it's a specific question. The way things are, that answering that question has to account for a lot of other things in the background.
Yeah, it yeah, and it, you know, you fold in price and you fold in intentions. You know, if you're breeding to race, if you're breeding to sell, you know, what kind of a foal. But this is a unique scenario to have two foal brothers, right? When was When was the last time something like this occurred?
Yeah, I can't, off the top of my head,
right?
In this country, it's very difficult for me to even think about it. They come up with, you know, two that were, went to stud. You know, we've talked about Rags to Riches and Jazeel.
Right.
You know, one was a female and one was a male. I can't think of an example off the top of my head. The mare, however, I did see a tweet today from Resolute Racing, where she's, you know, she's in Fold of Good Magic, carrying a sibling, but it's going to be a filly. They announced it that the next Puka's next foal is going to be a filly, and you know, that's fantastic for the breeder.
Yep.
Now, you know, again, to put that into context, though, at the moment, and it's still early in his career, and things can always change, but Good Magic is showing a pronounced occult bias. In other words, if you look at all his good horses, all his grade one winners, that includes Blazing Sevens from his first crop, to Mage, Dornock, W. Nell, a bunch of, you know, I had done this the other day, well, a month or two ago. Most of them are colts.
Yeah.
So he's sitting right now in his very serious colt bias, meaning that his best runners have been colts.
Well, and he's also, you're also going to have Muth that's going to come up behind at some point. He may, you know, yeah. he very well probably comes back for a you know, for a four-year-old year. Reincarnate, who we're going to talk about with Brad Free momentarily as mm-hmm. well. He's running in the Cougar tomorrow, and mm-hmm. he's going to get a chance at stud.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And just if you have the access, just look at his good Magic Stakes winners. I mean, you got to think really hard for the females.
Interesting. And I'm here. I'm just looking yeah. at looking at his top, yeah, quote unquote top runners. No, it is male laden.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But now Carlin though.
No, he gets good females too. I mean,
yeah,
yes, I mean,
yeah. yeah. It's interesting. Well, and look, that's the breed. The breed to quote Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, nature finds a way.
Yeah,
nature.
Let me see if I can find the one female that I did see. Hold on. There was, I mean, there might be some minor ones, but I think there were, Vegas Magic. Vegas Magic, who was a Sorrento Stakes Grade 2 winner, was a filly. I mean, there might be a couple, but a preponderance of males. So, you know what this means, too? In a lot of ways, for example, you know, if you're playing the odds and you're a yearling buyer and you're looking for a good Magic and you land on a filly, well, the statistical result of this is that your long odds at the moment, and we can only go by whatever numbers we have, your long odds to get a stakes filly by good Magic. Whereas, conversely, the colts are firing at a much higher rate than the norm.
People hear all the time about stallions who didn't necessarily get top sons, but their influence came as broodmare sires. I think the one that most people reference in that regard is Secretariat.
Right.
He became a great broodmare sire. So they influence the breed in the way in which nature intends.
That's right.
So, and the way top breeders harmonize the lines. So, well, Sid, we'll have the Jim Dandy result. Didn't get a chance to mention or bring up the result the other day on Friday from the Curlin, Unmatched Wisdom and Corporate Power, but we'll have plenty of time leading into what is shaping up to be a fabulous Travers.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll talk again next week.
You've got it. Sire Watch, Pedigree Thanks. Focus, brought to you by Hill & Dale and Work Thoroughbred Consultants. Sid and the team, 510-490-1111, and get out in front of it. You've certainly have got your babies. Your babies have had 3 to 6 months of growth, and so you know what your mares produced this past season, and start working together with Sid and Roger and Francis and everybody. I mentioned Frank McGooey, who gave us that answer on the Alabama winner, who I just did not recall. And it's funny. I do recall saying some other time that this was a horse I just did not have a recollection of. Louisiana bred up the Appalachie, bred by the owner, Simon Minos. And was a nice horse, made $600,000, 14-time winner for George Arsenault. And won significantly. And that summer came to Belmont and was second in the Prioress and then was second in the test before stretching out and winning the Alabama. I mean, she had won the Fairground Oaks and was second in the Fantasy, was seventh in the Kentucky Oaks in 87. Interesting. And in fact, I'll tell you, even since I've got the axe, I might as well use my library of American racing manuals. Bury Your Belief won the Oaks that year, and she was seventh. She was the 6-5 favorite in the Oaks. How about that? Wow. Bury Your Belief paid $18 for Laz Barrera with Jose Santos. Hometown Queen was second for Phil Oswald. Check in with Phil for all your horse transport needs. That's Sally. Interesting. New York bred, Bury Your Belief. That's another name that's a little obscure to me. Interesting. So anyway, Magui answered that, and he's on his way. I said, when are you coming up? So Magui's on his way here, and that'll mean a lot of fun. Outstanding. Let's reach for Brad Free, who graciously is able to join us, and I'm glad because it's $144,000 pick six carryover tomorrow, and we'll also take the opportunity to see what Brad thought of the early action. Brad, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Yeah, we got a nice little pick six carryover to shoot for on Thursday at Del Mar, 140 plus. The pool should be close to $1 million, and it's not an easy sequence, races 3-8 on Thursday, but probably worth taking a swing at considering how much money is at stake.
Well, and we'll go through it. It does include the Cougar, too. I talked to Baffert on Monday, and we kind of went through the stable a little bit. You know, Brad, he was funny. I referenced the Clip and Save column, the two-year-olds, and I asked him, you know, in the wake of the success that he had with two of them over the weekend, and he really was reluctant. He said, I don't want to, you know, show a preference for any of them because if I leave somebody out, you know, he didn't really want to expand on the, you know, which of the two-year-olds were coming up next and which ones were coming in hot.
Well, I'm not surprised. If you'll notice in the story, the last couple of years that I've written it, there have been no quotes from Baffert regarding his two-year-olds because he has respectfully declined to comment on his stable for that very reason. He's afraid he's going to offend some owner. He doesn't want to start ranking these two-year-olds going into summer. So I get it. There are other guys, thankfully, that do enjoy talking about their unraced two-year-olds. So anyway, we do what we can. And as usual, Baffert has a pretty deep roster of two-year-olds. There were four two-year-old maiden races opening weekend. All four of them, two were open, two for cowbreds, one for open for colts and fillies, other colts and geldings, other for fillies. All four two-year-old races opening weekend were won by first-time starters that went favored. It was kind of incredible. It's like you can't put anything over on anybody anymore. Getaway Car, probably Baffert-trained Getaway Car, probably the most impressive of the four. He's a Curlin colt, and he won going 5/8, and you have to believe with that pedigree, he might be able to go a little bit longer. His dam was a sprint stakes winner. But I thought it was kind of interesting that the two-year-old form held up, at least on opening weekend. Getaway Car got a 76 buyer. As far as the lasting significance of Getaway Car, I'm not sure what he's going to turn out to be. At first, I was wanted to compare him to having a Meltdown, who won on opening weekend a couple years ago and then came back and won the Best Pal. I'm not so sure that that's a fair comparison. I think that Having a Meltdown obviously went on to become a better horse. And we'll find out about Getaway Car down the road. But I will say this, what Getaway Car did do, at least for me, from a personal level, I started listening to Taylor Swift. That Getaway Car is named after a Taylor Swift song, and it is a very good song. Taylor Swift is a songwriter. So now here I am, I'm starting to listen to Taylor Swift. So maybe the summer of 2024 will be the year that I turn into a country type of fan.
How funny. Well, her music is sort of undefinable almost. I did not realize that there was a Taylor tie-in.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, funny. And of course, in addition to Getaway Car, Casalou, who was the Caracaro that you wrote up? I actually went and carved out the whole, three paragraphs that you wrote, and Emerald Bay, Authentic Spirit, Cornucopian, Gaming, Kalia Bay, Goal Oriented, Matticat Road, Lannister. He did mention Lannister, those are the boys. Nooney, of course, and Pridman. He did bring up Pridman. In addition, the Justify. It's funny. You added up the price tags, $30 million in horse flesh.
Yeah, and that's only the ones that I know about. I mean, there could be considerably more. $20 million worth of colts, $10 million worth of fillies. Baffert's owners spend a lot of money. They buy the best horses, and Baffert trains them well. So, you breed the best of the best or buy the best, give them to the best trainer, and usually good things happen. So Baffert's going to be dominant in the two-year-old races all summer long. It happens year after year after year. You just can't compete with a guy who has owners that are, willing to spend, $1.8 million on a filly by Win Win Win, who ran, I'm talking about Nooney, who ran like she was worth every penny of that. It'll be fun to try to watch these Baffers. It'd be fun to maybe try to take a shot against them, because regardless of their high win percentage, they all go off at short prices. I mean, Getaway Car paid 460, Casalou paid 320. So we'll see. There'll be some upsets down the road. But in the meantime, to win a two-year-old race at Del Mar in summer, you have to beat Baffert, and that is a lot easier said than done.
We'll talk about the stakes in a second, but there were also some maiden winners that lit the board up. John Sheriff's with Atitlan, the three-year-old, was a $72 mutual to close out opening day, right? And there was also Sadler with a non-Horonis runner that paid $68. That was Schwarzmeier. The Liam's Map colt, the homebred from Iapetus Racing. There were some light ups, and we should probably talk about the 3-5 winner of Mandela's that wired in the sixth opening day. That was Cayucos.
Cayucos, yeah, I don't know. She was a little green through the lane. The final time was slow. The track favored her style. She got a 62 buyer speed figure. It was a winning debut. You can't knock it. And as a two-year-old, she certainly has a right to move forward second time out. She got the money. That's all I can say. When she steps into, I would assume, a Calbred Stakes next time out, it's going to be a little bit tougher, but she should be a little tougher as well. So Cayucos ran well. For sure. As far as those two long shot winners that you mentioned, Steve, Schwarzmeier was a blinkers on. After a crazy horse like that runs in, I like to look back and see, is there any way you can make a case for this horse? I had a hard time doing that even after the race. But Schwarzmeier did add blinkers, I believe. And the other upset winner, the Sheriff's Train second time starter, I was talking to him on Sunday morning. Sheriff's, he goes, at Teetland is a half to Astronaut. Astronaut's a great at stakes winning turf horse. And I'm like, I like slapped my forehead. No, I did not. I didn't realize that. Not that I would have picked the horse, but if you're spreading the race, and I know some guys who did spread the race, you know, that would be a nice 35-1 shot to include on your ticket. So those two big bomb winners, both of them, you could make a case for them, I suppose, in hindsight. The blinkers on for Schwerz Uppmeyer over speed favoring track, and the pedigree of a second start maiden at Teatland on grass. So big winners on opening weekend, big long shot winners trained by Sadler and Sheriff. Sheriff's, by the way, had a couple of long shot winners. The other one, whose name escapes me at the moment, anyway, he won with, he had two long shot winners on opening weekend. Oh, Kahuna Magic at 35.60 in a horrible non-winners twice lifetime low level claiming race, and Kahuna Magic got up to $35. So Sheriff's is going to make his fans even more fans this summer with winners like that, and we'll find out if his Express Train can handle the, you know, move up in class, second start back off of layoff on Saturday in the San Diego. But in an interesting week, to me, the most impressive winner on open weekend was First Piece on Sunday in the Wicker Stakes. I know he got a great trip. He sat fourth behind three dueling leaders, but then he reeled them in and he ran a mile on grass, talking about First Piece, in 133.81. That was significantly faster than Bran, stakes winner Bran, ran in race one, and a lot faster also than A.G. Bullitt, who won the Oceanitas for Phillies and Mares earlier on the card. A very impressive stretch-out win for First Piece, who is a better horse since he has learned to kind of ration his speed. And he'll be tested for class late August in the Grade Two Del Mar Mile, trained by Mark Glatt. But First Piece, a very impressive winner, and Sunset Glory was also very sharp, winning a one other than on grass on Sunday. It was, she's a filly running long on grass, and she swept wide and just crushed the field by more than three lengths. So First Piece, Sunset Glory, a couple of very nice winners on opening weekend.
Well, you mentioned Glatt had a very good start to the weekend, to the season. Also, First Piece winning, the Wicker, as mentioned. Atomic Drop, just a, you know, a nice claiming win at a short price. It was taken by Francisco Rodriguez. Glatt with Tiger Horn for Rancho Temescal and Red Baron. So a very, there were quite a few people that had multiple wins. Right, that kind of sounded rang the bell, getting the meet going. Doug O'Neill as well, Michael McCarthy. We should touch on the two other stakes, Ice Cream You Scream for Phil D'Amato, Michael with Formidable Man in the Oceanside, the first stake of the year, and Richard Baltus kind of working his way back from the suspension and kind of reassembling the, you know, the barn, and I think that's his second stake win since getting going again, this in the Oceanitas with Ag Bullet.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Baltus, it's taken a while to, you know, kind of recover from his, I guess you could call it a setback. He got busted, and he had to take some time off, but he's back now. You know, Baltus hasn't changed personally. I mean, he's still a fun guy to visit with. He seems like he's a grouch. He's really not. He's a good trainer, and I expect that Baltus, you know, is going to have a good summer as well.
Well, let's
Before we talk about anything, I want to mention one thing.
Sure.
And that is, in my opinion, the main track on opening weekend was extremely biased towards speed. There were 11 dirt races, and 10 of them were won by a horse either setting the pace or within one length of the lead. I know that a lot of those winners were favorites. They, you know, they took the lead and they were gone. They were supposed to win according to the, you know, the betting pools. But there was very little movement from the back of the pack. It's one thing to say, oh, well, every race was won by the pace setter. That doesn't necessarily mean there was a speed bias. But when you look behind that front running winner and see if anybody makes up any ground, they weren't making up any ground. It was like a series of parades on opening weekend. I hope that the track kind of changes a little bit. It's boring to watch, you know, one front running winner after another, and the field strung out, you know, from 15 lengths from first to last. It doesn't make for a real compelling compelling product. But they didn't have a whole lot of time to turn around the racetrack since when the fair closed. They had like 3 days to get the track ready. So maybe it'll change for week two. I'm not sure about that. But the track was extremely, in my opinion, speed favoring in the 11 dirt races on Saturday and Sunday.
Well, we'll find out, you know, pretty quickly. And of course, there's only, you got a fairly limited slate tomorrow. It's an 8-race card. And now what have I done? What have I done with it?
It's an 8-race card, but it's an important 8-race card due to that big carryover. You know, I wonder, at some point in time, I think it's these racetracks I'm referring to, Del Mar and Santa Anita, I think that they're considering changing the minimum bet of the pick six from $1 to $2. I know that has been discussed. Whether it's getting close to reality, I'm not sure about. But had there been a $2 pick six opening weekend instead of a $1 pick six, we could potentially be looking at a double carryover into the Thursday card of, you know, who knows how much, $750,000, and who knows how much they would bet on Thursday. So I think that down the road, believe that Del Mar and Santa Anita are at least considering moving the pick six from $1 to $2. I think it would be a good move. It would create more carryovers. It makes a handicapper, a horse player, make decisions as opposed to just buying a race in which you have no clue. And also, it makes it easier to just pass the sequence entirely if it's too expensive. And I don't think passing a sequence or a race or a bet is always a bad thing. So we'll find out down the road. But I'm looking forward to the time when the pick six returns to the $2 minimum in California.
Well, and you know, the pendulum certainly swung back, right? And toward away from the, other than really at Gulfstream, you know, the pendulum has kind of swung away from the jackpot.
Well, you know, thank God it has. I mean, for so long, when we had these ridiculous jackpot scheme wagers, at every opportunity I had, I would point out that those jackpot style wagers, the takeout rate is, you know, often more than 40%, the effective takeout rate. And I mentioned it as often as possible. There got to a point late in the, you know, the lifespan of the jackpot style wager where my editors were getting some heat from racetracks saying, you know, this guy needs to stop writing about how bad the jackpot style wagers are, even though it's the truth. And I got a call from an editor and said, hey, look, you need to tone it down a little bit with regards to this jackpot style wager. And my argument was, why? It's a stupid bet. It rips people off, rips horse players off, and it should be completely done with. He goes, yeah, I know, but we're getting some heat and we need you to back off a little bit. So it's so frustrating these days to be a turf rider with opinions that you cannot express properly. And that was just the latest example of the jackpot style. Well, guess what happened? They got rid of it finally, thank goodness. So we're down to a regular traditional style pick six, $1 minimum right now, 80-20 split to perfect tickets and consolations. And I'm glad that they've done that, but I'm again looking forward to the $2 wager when it happens.
Well, in the meantime, we've got races 3 through 8, and as you said, it is a tricky squirrely sequence. Nine, right now, before scratches or with some early scratches, you've got a 9x8x9x13x6 in the Cougar, by 11 or 10 after the
11 in the last.
11
race.
In the last. Yep.
Yeah, this is not an easy sequence. I honestly don't know if I can even afford to play because you have to spend a lot of money in every single race just to stay alive. The horse that I like the most on the card is not even favored on the morning line. That's Reincarnate in the Cougar. He's second choice behind Salesman. But it's a very tricky sequence. Starting with race number 3, it's a 5-furlong turf sprint, $32,000 claiming fillies and mares. The rails are 24 feet. We talked about this a little bit last week, Steve. When turf sprints with the rails down, closers can win, and I believe that they did on opening week. There was one turf sprint won by Tiger Hunt, who, I don't know, he rallied. I guess you say he rallied from fifth position. But with the rails at 24 feet, it's a different type of configuration, and forwardly placed runners generally hold the advantage with the in five furlong turf sprints at Del Mar with the rails at 24. Having said that, I picked a horse, a filly, a mare, who's going to be rallying from behind in the first leg of the pick six, and that's She's Got Away. She's listed at 6-1. She has run well over the Del Mar turf course. In fact, that was the site of her most recent win last summer at Del Mar, you know, one other than. She's dropping from a runner-up finish for 40 down to 32. It's her first start since May. I think that she can wear them down, but I'm not confident in the selection at all. Number one, Aventap, trained by Mark Glad, who ran well last time out, was simply third best. Palio's Princess, number eight, had a wide trip last time out, and that foiled her chances, but she's drawn in post eight. I can't see how she's going to avoid another wide trip. And then the morning line favorite is Recinto Rompere, who is dropping from two other than to 32,000. She does have enough tactical speed to be forwardly placed. Those are the four. And I'm not even sure that the winner is among those. It's a very difficult race in which to, you know, kind of narrow it down. I think you have to spend money in the first race. I think you also have to spend money in the second leg. It's a 1 mile main track dirt race for older maidens. The favorite is Mark Glad, morning line favorite is Visceral, number two, stretching out off of a debut fourth in a sprint. That was the race won by Eagles Flightline sibling. A very fast race. Blinkers are off, sprint to route. Has a decent 69 buyer. I'm not sure that he has to win this race. In fact, I picked against him. I took Canada Gate, who was, not that impressive in his comeback, but he hadn't started since April. He finished second by 9 lengths behind Pony Express, who I believe is headed to a stakes race at somewhere on the East Coast.
No, he's in the Jim Dandy on Saturday.
Well, there you go. He is. There's Pony Express, who's very, very good. I wrote about him last summer as a 2-year-old. John Sadler trainee. Pony Express came out on the track. It was one of the early maiden races last summer, and they scratched him in the post parade. This is a horse that costs seven figures. He was scratched in the post parade, and he completely disappeared. He came back this winter, spring, couple of sprints, then stretched out and demolished the field. I think the Pony Express still could be a very good horse for Sadler. We'll find out this weekend in the Jim Dandy. But Canada Gate finished 9 lengths behind Pony Express. That was Canada Gate's first start since April. I expect he will improve second start back. I thought that his stablemate Winterfell has run races that are good enough. And you have to respect Visceral, the Mark Glatt train Son of Violence, going long off of a respectable debut. So at least three deep in the second leg. That's race number four. Two tough races to start the sequence.
Let me, and I'm pulling up time form, and just want to jibe the pace scenario. Kind of a neutral pace in that third race with Woodbine Way. Lorenzo Campuzano coming off.
She's quick. She's fast. I'm not sure how she stacks up class wise. I mean, this is a filly that got buried for 10,000 claiming three starts back.
Well, and
she improved. She improved off the claim, third by a neck, second by a length for 14 and a starter 16. I think she's facing a lot tougher company on Thursday, but she is quick and she potentially, could have the lead, depending on the filly Corsication, who I think has some gas as well, Los Alamitos nighttime specialist. I think that those two might compromise each other. But listen, speed is effective most of the time, no matter what configuration or surface. So Woodbine Way, she'll be in the right spot for him to be placed. She has a shot as well, yeah.
Well, you put She's Got Away on top with Aventap and Palio's Princess. Brad, I'm going to make a case for the Marty McGee open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. Joe Talamo for Phil D'Amato, a day in Asia at 8-1. What's wrong with her?
Well, her form is not that great. Talamo is having a hard time gaining traction out here. She's stuck out in post nine. I don't know how she can get a good trip. I think there's a lot of challenges that a day in Asia must overcome. this is when D'Amato begins to drop horses in class, it is never a good thing.
Interesting.
Sometimes they can, you know, return to form on the class drop against easier company. But when D'Amato horses start their descent down the class ladder, I avoid them at all costs. It was the same thing when D'Amato worked for trainer Mike Mitchell. Mitchell and D'Amato are two of the best trainers that I've ever been around. But from a horse playing perspective, when their horses began to descend the class ladder, run and hide is the best thing to do. So to me, A Day in Asia, yes, she is good enough to win if she returns to the best form that she has had. She certainly faced a lot tougher company. She ran in stakes races three of her last four starts, but she's on the decline of her career. She's drawn in the parking lot. I don't like her. If she wins, I'm going to be knocked out of the pick six in the very first leg.
Let's go to the second again. And to reiterate for people, Canada Gate, Visceral, Winterfell, the three that you singled out. And for those that heard Baffert on Monday, Brad, he gushed about Pony Express, because he said he thought that he was coming into that maiden race at Santa Anita. He thought he was coming into that race hot with Canada Gate. And
well, it's interesting that he thought that, because Canada Gate was 5-1, and in the very same race, his other starter Winterfell was 5-2. So the bettors liked Winterfell more than Canada Gate. Canada Gate ran better than Winterfell. He finished second. Canada Gate did. Winterfell finished a distant fourth. So I think the bettors had it, you know, at least going in, they preferred Winterfell. They ran okay. You know, they both need to improve. The thing about Winterfell is he ran two races at Santa Anita in April and May that are the fastest races by anyone in this field. Last time out, he broke from the outside. He was, you know, three wide most of the trip, and he just kind of sputtered. Talamo off, Kimura on. You know, I'm sure he's a better horse than he showed last time out. And if he runs back to his two previous starts, he'll be right there. To me, Winterfell is a must use.
Yeah.
Anytime Baffert has more than one horse in the race, you have to look at the one that is least preferred, because there's a reason Baffert is running Winterfell against Canada Gate. In my opinion, I think that he believes Winterfell is every bit as good as Canada Gate, at least going in.
Well, and from a fig standpoint, they both, they're pretty clear, although Indispensable for Sadler, Battle Cruiser for Sadler.
Yep.
And even this Captain Chuchis, the George Papa Padromo, who is, kind of has a career maiden look, but from a fig standpoint, is competitive.
From a fig standpoint, based on last start only, Captain Chuchis is the fastest horse in the race.
And at a mile, yeah.
Yeah, he got an 8.5 on Thoroughgraph last time out. That's the highest last start figure in the field. And there he is sitting out there at 12-1. Yet another reason why this pick six is so difficult. We can talk about probably the entire field in the first two legs and make a case for just about every entrant.
State-bred fillies and mares are going 5/8 on the turf in the third leg, and looking at a 7-2 favorite, 5-2 favorite.
Yeah, 5-2 favorite is Baby Kristen, and boy, she is a consummate professional. She's based in Northern California. She's won 9 of 23 starts. Her last race was basically a walk in the park at 4-5. She got it in easy. She was sprinting 3/4 on dirt at Pleasanton. I've never seen this fraction in a sprint race in California. She got the opening quarter in 24 seconds. I don't know if that's right. She looked like she was going pretty easily, and she wired the field. The thing about Baby Kristen is this, and I've noticed this over the years, and I've been fooled by this situation many times, and I'm not going to be fooled again, and that is Northern California turf sprinters shipping to Southern California. It is a severe class hike, and they frequently underperform. I'm not saying that Baby Kristen will. I'm just saying that I am typically leery of Northern California-based turf sprinters trying the Southern California circuit. The class distinction between the two circuits is still pretty steep, and Baby Kristen, who I picked third, and I respect her speed and her 9 career wins. I did have trouble in this race, and I went with the filly that I'm not sure if this is the right choice or not. But number 5, Mirinda. Her debut last fall, or last summer at Del Mar, was spectacular. She won by more than 6 lengths. She got an 82 buyer. That was as a 2-year-old filly, an 82 buyer. And I thought, wow, this is a cowbred that's going places for trainer Gary Mandela. She disappointed next time out in the Golden State Juvenile Fillies, and she came out of the race with a breathing issue that was remedied. But then when Mandela brought her back in the Evening Jewel, she was 6-5, and she kind of floundered again. She ran poorly. So after her smashing debut, 2 subpar efforts. Now she hasn't been out since April. She's adding Lasix. It's her first start on grass. She has some grass in her pedigree. And I picked her, Mirinda, because I think she can sit second right behind Baby Kristen and maybe get first run. The other filly that I did pick second is a 3-year-old facing older for the first time, and that's number 1, Quick Kate. She's a come from behind her, a deep closer with the rails at 24 feet, so Armando Ayuso is going to have to work out some trip. But she's good right now, Quick Kate is, and she's getting better. And when these Craig Lewis trainees begin to improve incrementally, you never can tell where they're going to, you know, top out. So I would expect Quick Kate, a 3-year-old against older with a significant weight break. She carries 118, 124 for most of the others. She'll be rolling late. So again, this is a race that is tough. I don't like the morning line favorite, or I'd be willing to have Baby Kristen beat me. But I'm not sure that Mirinda is as good as her debut last September. I don't know if Quick Kate's going to negotiate a trip. So that's the third leg of a very tough sequence.
Now, no doubt. And I'm just poking around. There's really nothing else. I suppose the recent maiden winner, Sassy Prance a Lot, you know, this deserves some respect and consideration as well. I am looking forward to seeing what Toby Terrell and what Andy Harrington have to say later today about these races. Then we get a maiden 20 in the middle of everything here, and a big bulky field. The clocker reports will be invaluable in here. We've got some lightly raced types. And how about the Dorf swinging back into action, Jerry Hollendorfer?
Yeah, he's got number 7, Eddie's Wave. Didn't show a whole lot in his career debut last November for Hollendorfer here at Del Mar. Finished 6th at 3-1. Comes back at rock bottom, adds Lasix. You know, he has a license to improve. First start back, he's never lost at this class level. Nor has the horse that I think is the horse to beat, number 10, Akasek. I probably mispronounced that. I think that's the lead singer of the rock group Cars. At any rate, Akasek.
Okasek.
There you go. Okasek. He pressed the fast pace, and then he kind of, you know, backed up in his most recent start. That was in a maiden 40. There's a pretty big difference between maiden 40 and maiden 20. And I think that he should improve second start back, number 10. Okasek. I can't speak. That's why I'm a journalist.
Not a DJ.
Instead of being on the air. Anyway, number 10, I think, is the right horse. Number 2, Antibes, is a career maiden, 0-9, but he's run races fast enough on grass for this dirt race. He's never raced at the bottom. He has a shot. Look, this is another tough race, maiden 20s.
Yeah, and you know, it's unusual to look at a group like this, and really, there's no clear, obvious pace horse. You know, Summer Chief has got a thing that I tell people to look for in this kind of a setting, Brad, and that is a horse that suddenly showed some front end ability that pops up, you know, in their PPs, had never been as close to the pace. And actually, when this Curlin de Mischief Gelding came back as a 4-year-old, he showed just the briefest speed in the opening quarter and then started to back up. But then in that second start of the year, facing open company, as he does here, he extended that speed. That frequently is a sign of more to come.
I agree. This horse is listed at 20-1, number 9, Summer Chief. He didn't run that great in his comeback. Showed some brief speed, backed up, and finished 7th by a long ways. His second start back off the layoff was an improved effort. He was up there dueling on the lead. He finished 4th by 3. He earned a good number. His 14 1/4 thoroughgraph number last time out is tied for the fastest last start figure in the field. The other one is a horse named Here Comes Braylon, who ran at Sunray Park in his debut earlier this year. Summer Chief has speed. They're going 3/4 on a track that, at least opening weekend, was beneficial to his running style. And of course, with maiden claiming sprints, you typically want to be on or near the front end. That's how most of those races are won. Summer Chief, that's where he'll be. And I wouldn't talk anybody off of Summer Chief at odds of 20-1 in the program. He's my, I think I picked him 5th, maybe. He's a contender. I still prefer the horse to his outside, number 10, Okasik.
Okasik. Sir Rock probably shows some speed. He has had leads at certain times. It feels like Michael McCarthy trying to find the right spot, but he is sliding down the scale. This was a $775,000 gun runner. Wow.
Yeah, he didn't quite pan out, but they don't always pan out.
No.
At least he made it to the races, and I guess that at maybe 20, you'd have to consider him. Sir Rock is listed at a surprisingly high 20-1. You don't see Michael McCarthy start too many 20-1 shots. So, he's my third preference. Sir Rock is, and in a spread race, he's worth consideration on the class drop.
Well, those two are the ones that are either going to vie for the lead, one or the other, Sir Rock or Summer Chief, both 20-1. And if either gets loose, they may forget to stop, as they say. Let's talk about the Cougar 2 and the mile-and-a-half standard. Reincarnate shows up here out of the Gold Cup try, and Baffert said he's trying to get this one going, and with the obvious goal of the Pacific Classic or the other thing, the back at Santa Anita, the Cup. But, he does own this Del Mar win. Going back to the maiden breaker, and that was the only time, he didn't get a chance last summer, because Baffert pointed toward the Pennsylvania Derby after the Los Al Derby, so he skipped Del Mar, and of course it's not a strong dirt program for 3-year-olds. Is this a single?
Well, to me, he is. I think that he's simply the best horse in the field. Runner-up last time out in the Gold Cup at Santa Anita. I know that the Gold Cup has lost a lot of its luster and is now a grade two, but he did finish 2nd. His third place finish in the Santa Anita handicap in March was solid. And Reincarnate, he should love a mile and a half, according to Baffert and according to racing manager Tom Ryan. They both think this horse will run all day. In fact, even last spring, and his 3-year-old campaign a year ago, Reincarnate, was a mess. I mean, that was when Baffert was, moving horses into different trainers' barns and trying to get to the Kentucky Derby, and Reincarnate did, in fact, run in the Kentucky Derby. He didn't finish anywhere. I think it's taken Baffert a while to get this gray front runner pace presser back in top form. I think that's where he's at now, Reincarnate. He should get a great trip, forwardly placed in a mile-and-a-half dirt race that is going to unfold at a relatively soft pace. I handicapped this race, and then I went and talked to the morning line maker, Jeff Siegel, and said, hey, Siegel, what price are you going to make Reincarnate? And expecting him to say, 7-5 favorite or 6-5 or whatever. He looks at me and goes, I'm not making Reincarnate the morning line favorite. And I went, what? He goes, Salesman has been training spectacularly for his first start since early March. And that was validated by trainer Richard Mandela's comments last weekend. He said this horse is a better horse now than he was going into the Santa Anita handicap. In fact, he's better now than he was going into the Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance that he won last fall at Santa Anita by more than 8 lengths. That was a 1 3/8 dirt marathon. So Salesman is training great. He's running under conditions similar to the best race of his career. He will fire And it's just a question if he's good enough. Salesman, Siegel made 8-5 favorite on the morning line. He made Reincarnate 9-5. If you wanted to be safe, I think you could probably just use both of them and not worry about it. But for the sake of, you know, economics, I think somewhere along the line you have to single. I prefer Reincarnate. I'm just not sure if the big win by Salesman was a one-off, because that was sandwiched in between four other kind of nondescript U.S. starts. So Reincarnate to me is more reliable. He's going to get a forwardly placed trip. And to me, he's a single, but Salesman, my second preference, it wouldn't surprise me if he runs to his workouts. You know, he could easily run right past Reincarnate in the lane. So those are the two that I would use in the Cougar. It's been a while since the Cougar has produced the winner of the Pacific Classic, but it has happened before. And that was in, I believe, 2010. Richards Kidd finished third in the Cougar, came back and won the Pacific Classic in his next start. And I think that's where Baffert would like to try to do that again with Reincarnate. Only I'm sure he'd like to win the Cougar first. And then Salesman, Mandela, I asked him about the Pacific Classic. He wanted no part of that conversation. He said, I'm just focusing on the Cougar for now, and we'll see what happens coming out. But Reincarnate and Salesman, they kind of tower over the other four starters.
We have to at least, before we go to the nightcap, which is interesting, and I think people could get a little narrow, got to mention Midnight Mammoth, who isn't this the leader that needs to be reeled in?
Well, either he or number one, Calm C. I'm not sure which one is going to go for the lead. They both are capable. If they want it, they can have it. And Midnight Mammoth, he's in sharp form right now, and his numbers are good. 93 and 95 buyer speed figures in his last two starts. And when he won that one other man at Santa Anita, not only did he get a good buyer number, he also got a great Thoroughgraph number, a 2 on Thoroughgraph that puts him right in there in the Reincarnate territory. So, look, if you're going 3 deep, I think Midnight Mammoth is the third horse in the race. You have to at least consider him.
It gets us to the nightcap of this $144,000 pick six carryover tomorrow at Del Mar, a 1 mile maiden special weight for 3 and ups. And you've got the classic pick six dilemma to deal with here, which is taking lightly raced horses that haven't proven, to be, of the career maiden ilk. That would obviously be Nation and Oscar Joy versus horses like Quality Wins and American Glory, who have been, sniffing around and cashing checks, but haven't gotten over the top. Then there's even longer priced types like Sweet Odyssey for Phil D'Amato, who can't be ruled out, even though he's 20-1.
Yeah, I think that Nation, number 3 Nation, a comebacker, second start maiden, trained by Michael McCarthy now. I think that he's going to be a potential single on a lot of tickets. He ran very well in his career debut. He was 3-1 at Keeneland last fall in a maiden turf route, and he did not have a good trip. He was keen and rank early. He was wide much of the trip. He finished well, ran well, finishing second, and then he disappeared. Well, he's now back in California. Michael McCarthy is his new trainer, and if he improves off that runner-up career debut at Keeneland, and Keeneland maiden races are significantly stronger than any maiden race, any maiden turf race out in California. Even though that field wasn't the best maiden field that I think they've run there at that track, Nation ran well in a big field with not a good trip, and he should fire first start back under Umberto Rispoli, who had a terrific opening weekend. I think he won 5 races, riding very well. Rispoli is. He's the leading jockey after opening weekend. I think that Nation is a potential single in his comeback, and to me, his main rival is kind of stuck in a bad spot. That's number 10, Oscar Joy, who ran very well first time out. He finished second in a turf sprint at Santa Anita, going 6.5. He should make a forward move. Peter Miller trained maidens generally improve with racing. The problem is Oscar Joy is way out in the parking lot in post number 10. Antonio Frisu had an opening weekend to forget. I think he had 19 mounts, 1 win, and he got socked with a 5-day suspension that he'll have to serve imminently. So a tough spot for Oscar Joy. That's one another reason why I prefer Nation, who drew post number three. Quality Wins is the fastest horse in the race on numbers, but as you said, he's a career maiden, four consecutive losses as the favorite, 0-6 overall. He strikes me as one of those horses that just doesn't quite get there. But listen, off of back-to-back runner-up finishes in sprints, you'd have to at least consider him. And these career maidens eventually do find a field they can beat. I think that he's up against it against Nation, who would be a potential single for me. He's the 5-2 favorite on the morning line.
Well, there's a walkthrough of the 3rd through the 8th tomorrow, and it is a treacherous sequence. Approachable and worth trying, but maybe get together with friends. Everybody put, you know, everybody throw in 100 each, three of you, a $288 ticket maybe, something like that, and give yourself a fighting chance. And, Brad, looking ahead, they'll draw today, the Saturday card. What do we have, the Bing? We got the Bing Crosby.
The Bing Crosby with the Chosen Vaughn is expected to start favorite. I watched him work with trainer Eric Kruljack on Sunday morning. Kruljack was happy. Jockey Hector Berrios was over the moon. He said this horse loves this racetrack. The Chosen Vaughn with a good post and a good trip, he's the horse to beat in the Bing Crosby. And in the San Diego, really looking forward to that race as well. It's expected to draw comebacker Arabian Knight. Arabian Knight won the Pacific Classic here last year as a three-year-old, making his first start back off a layoff for Baffert. I expect him to run, and I expect him to run well, but for Arabian Knight, it's a comeback prep race. And, you know, let's not forget that I think Baffert, didn't he start Arrogate in the San Diego a few years ago?
And he flopped.
You know, finished off the board at a short number. So it's a comeback prep for Arabian Knight. He's up against Subsanador's expected to start in the field, Express Train for Sheriffs. I think there are some others in there. I know the Baffert nominated Muth. I'm not sure if he's going or not. But a couple of good stakes races, graded stakes on Saturday, along with the Daisy Cutter for Phillies and Philly Mare Sprinters. So I think Phil D'Amato has Elm Drive nominated, at least, and Stay and Scam is going to be shortening up from two turns to one turn. So some good racing up ahead on Saturday, probably led by the Chosen Vaughn. He's the top sprinter in California, and he's going to be facing a deep, deep field in the Bing Crosby.
And then the Eddie Reed on Sunday.
Eddie Reed on Sunday, yeah. I don't have my list of starters right in front of me, but if I keep talking long enough, I can scramble right into it. That is it's a 1/1/8 turf race on Sunday, the Eddie Reed, and that is expected to include horses such as Balnikov, De Jure is nominated, Easter, another Phil D'Amato, along with his stablemate Gold Phoenix, Joe Hans, who was so impressive winning last time out, and Masterpiece has returned to California. He won this race 2 years ago, Masterpiece did, now trained by Dick Dutrow, and Masterpiece is expected for the Eddie Reed as well. A good grass race on Sunday, 1/1/8. I don't know who the favorite is going to be. It might be Joe Hans, but a good deep field going to 1/1/8.
First full week of action at Old Del Mar, and Brad, I really appreciate this. Brad Free won. Everybody, Brad's analysis, and later Toby Terrell's workout report for Del Mar, and give us a little bit of a help on this $144,000 pick six sequence. Thanks, Brad.
Okay, anytime. I'll talk to you soon, Steve.
I appreciate it. Brad Free, what a terrific, thorough rundown. Seth Merrow is standing by, probably still at the tent, I imagine. And that's where I left him on Sunday after Loose on the Lead. We had a really fun. If you missed the show on Sunday, you can always watch it on the Capital OTB YouTube channel. Seth, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, another raucous edition of Loose on the Lead, as they always are. Got good feedback on the front side Sunday, as I typically do. So, as you say, people can watch it live no matter where they are on the Capital OTV YouTube channel when we're doing it, but they can also pick up the archive there as well.
Excellent. Well, I might be over tomorrow to do the show there, unless the weather is crappy. In that case, we will probably do it on Friday when we know the weather is going to be gorgeous. We'll have more time for you to sit in hour three later in the week. But what do we got? We got about 8 minutes. Any thoughts before we look at the card today?
Torpedo Anna was excellent. And unmatched wisdom in the curling. The curling runners, you know, historically, as they go to the Travers, maybe, and I went back and looked. A lot of them don't move on to the Travers, but they haven't been spectacular. But in this season, I don't know. Although you tie in Dornock, who stepped to the head of the class, and Torpedo Anna, if she goes in the Travers, it still may be a tough ask. But I thought unmatched wisdom looked okay on Friday. So it was a nice weekend of racing. Pounce in the Lake George. You had mentioned it, I think, on Sunday on TV. Mark Cassie having a really good meet so far, and Pounce added to that, certainly. So, yeah, it was a fun weekend.
Well, and he's having a good meet at all the summer venues. That includes what's going on, of course, at Woodbine, and he's had winners at Ellis and at Gulfstream. He's got the Gulfstream horses. He's in full flight. There's no doubt about it. Looking at the action today, Seth, and I just pulled up the because I was waiting to see what was happening weather-wise as I ended up, you know, shifting and coming home from the airport. The rain poured in, and I thought, you know, maybe there was a chance that that the track got inundated. But right now, we're good to go. They are holding the MTOs, I'll tell you that. The MTOs in the 6th, 8th, and 9th. They did scratch the MTOs out of the 5th. So what they're projecting, what Glenn Kozak and the team, is that if the rain comes, it would be, you know, 3 o'clock on. So right now they have not scratched the 11, 12, 13, 14 out of the 6th, the 13 or 14 out of the 8th, and the 12 out of the 9th. So I hope that we don't have a potential to, you know, create an irksome scenario.
I can tell you sitting on the set on the backstretch right now, the sun has just poked through. So it's actually a nice day right now, although it's still all around overcast. We'll see how it plays out. But right now, the sun is shining here in Saratoga. Opener today is my dark horse play of the day, and I scratched it. It originally was underneath. And, you know, dark horse, I'm looking for a price. I thought McCaw from Roddy Vellante was tough in here. That would scratch, though. So now I move up my dark horse to my top pick. 10-1 Beach Blanket, I think, is going to be interesting in the opener. For Linda Rice, paid $77,000, second start of the career. They're going to go in for 20. The debut effort is going to hold up the odds, 12-1 on the morning line. And the debut effort was nothing to write home about. But it was a mile and 16th on the turf. And now sprints on the dirt. And if you look up underneath, there was a sibling called Blue Chipper that was a $1 million earner, albeit in South Korea, but they were all on the dirt. And that one came over here to run third in the 2019 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. So I thought Beach Blanket could be a little bit interesting as the dark horse play of the day today in race number one, horse number four. We'll take a little pop there at a price.
Interesting.
Sixth race again. The two more races. Hopefully, they stay on the turf. Sixth race, mile and 16th on the grass. I'm 7, 6, 3, and 5. I think overacting. If we get that 7-2, I think overacting is very solid. The turf races are all very good. I think you draw a line through the try in the Mount Vernon. It's Chad. It's Klarovich. Third start of the season. Again, 7-2 to me looks kind of generous. We'll see how that plays out. But in the 6th, I have it 7, 6, 3, and 5. And then in the nightcap, I think that one's wide open, but Tongue Twister at 5-1 is kind of interesting. Dylan Davis, who had the big day over the weekend, is on board. He's been on board this horse before, tried this type of company last time. Wasn't spectacular, but I think if you look at this particular field and what Tongue Twister has done so far, I think he might be a nice fit with this bunch, which is not a very strong group in here. So I have the 6 on top and the 9th. I have it 6, 2, 7, and 10.
Interesting. All right. Because I have not finished the I left some of the late turf spots open. War Terminatrix for Contessa, 12-1, and I think is live at a price in there. Lose Redemption, if she runs back to that May race at Aqueduct when she was third, that would be a good fit in this spot too. I considered this race for my play of the day. And I finally said, you know what, I'm going to leave this thing alone. Let's go back to the sixth for the play of the day. I found Snowy Evening to be the right price. Jose Ortiz reunites, and Ortiz has won multiple times for Donk with her. And she, I think she's the overlay in here. It's very competitive. It's New York bred, long on the grass, like I say all the time. And I'm just kidding. Spooky lady, money grab even, spinning colors, overacting, Snowy Evening. That's what, six? They're within a couple of lengths of each other. So it's all trip and pace. And I thought that Snowy Evening, gets a nice sort of mid-pack stalk and go kind of a trip in here. And 6-1 was my kind of price. The horse that I was would have been just as comfortable picking for the DePaula play is I'm Just Kidding, the two, who gets to save the ground with IRAD. So if you wanted to box the 2 and 9, I think you could do a lot worse. Very fun slate, and I'm a little late posting just because I was waiting for the turf decision. So I'll get the first half of the card. Actually, races 1 through 6 are done. So I'll post that, and then I'll fill out the rest of everything by about 12:30.
As you sound like me, I do that when I'm posting my picks online too, with some comments. There's some days I'm a little bit behind, and you just gotta play catch up during Saratoga. That's what it's all about. And hopefully, because I totally agree with you, hopefully the weather holds out, because I think this card offers some interesting opportunities. So we'll see what Sunday. I finally felt like I put a decent entire day together Sunday, and so hopefully I'm on the roll now.
Well, that's funny, because I had what I considered my worst day, but I at least could at least rationalize it of the first 9 days. The mayhem at the house with the grandchildren. It was a little tough to, as I'm writing the thing up, it was time for Pop to make French toast, and you gotta cut up fruit, you gotta cut up melon into bite-sized pieces, and it's a little challenging.
That's great. But you got to multitask. Cut up the cantaloupe and handicap the second race while you're waiting for the French toast to toast up on one side. Yeah.
Seth Merrow, everybody. Seth Merrow 2 on your Twitter, but number 1 in your heart. And back tomorrow, of course, with Racing Across America. Across America. Yeah.
And hopefully tomorrow, looking forward, maybe get Katie Davis and Robbie Davis, because they're doing the challenge on Saturday over at the harness track. Katie's going to be on one of those under saddle trotters, and Robbie's going to be in a sulky. So it should be fun. So hopefully I'll have them. I think the game plan is get them in tomorrow to promo that charity event Saturday. Yeah, it should be fun.
I love it. Seth Merrow, everybody, will be together Sunday as well on Loose on the Lead. And we'll probably have Seth live on Friday. We'll do some handicapping Friday from the racetrack.
Yeah, let me know if you're over there. And good luck to everybody this afternoon. Have fun.
Thanks, everybody. There it is. Seth Merrow, Brad Free, Sid and Dick, and Melanie Giddings, who sends out those horses in the second and third. Leon Blue making the debut, and then coach's horse, Mel's baby sister. So a lot of emotion attached to her. Returning to Saratoga. We'll return to Saratoga at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thanks, everybody. Good luck. Talk to you soon. Let the summertime song fall on the apple. There goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is a soul.